This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Little beach music to calm us all down and kind of mellow out the day. Hi, welcome to the After Party Live following the Nicki Maduro Show and the Mark Thompson Show. I've kicked that Mark Thompson Show, Mark Thompson guy loose, back on my own again. So thanks for being here on the After Party Live. Trivia will happen today. Today, and this is a suggestion from Mama Day Three Boys, today we're taking the U.S. citizenship test. So I have that ready to go. I have the regular one, and then I have the hard one. So we'll do that. That is coming up here on the After Party Live. But first, why don't we go ahead and get started? Because I have a lot of videos to show you today, a lot of animal stories as well. Can you please click the like button and please subscribe if you haven't already? Thank you for doing that. I wanted to show you this first story, and it's always kind of exciting, but also a little nerve-wracking when this happens, when you see a whale in maybe a place that they don't usually show themselves, right? And here this happened on the Central Coast. Look at that beautiful animal, man. This is a gray whale that made its way, I don't know if it's a him or a her, made its way into a harbor in Morro Bay here in California. And this young gray whale has been seen hanging out in the harbor in Morro Bay for more than a week. And people are flocking to the harbor just to catch a glimpse. This is a spring break destination for some people, Morro Bay. And a ton of interest now because this gray whale is making the rounds right near the harbor. The Morro Bay Harbor Patrol, the Coast Guard, and the Marine Mammal Center, they've all been tracking this young gray whale that entered the harbor and liked it, decided to set up tents, to set up camp for a while, right? The Marine Mammal Center says not a lot of detail is known right now. They don't know what gender it is. The exact length, they're not sure. The exact age, they don't know. But they think it's, based on the images, a juvenile. The center, the Marine Mammal Center, can confirm it's not a calf, though. It's not. They're not sure why it came into Morro Bay. It's not a rare occurrence for gray whales to come in, especially as they're migrating every year. But this whale has been spotted spouting and breaching and diving into the shallow waters of the harbor. So people are gathered all along the harbor to take pictures and videos and getting this huge show from this beautiful creature. So that's going on in Morro Bay. One man who has got a shop right along the waterfront says, "We heard about a whale for a few days, but I wasn't able to see it. I left the shop, saw a bunch of people on the pier, and then got the drone up and actually got footage of the whale." The footage of this whale catches it frolicking offshore. So pretty cool. The man who at the shop there says he's been there about 14 years, and there's a few times that whales have come into that harbor, but this one seems to be sticking around for a little while. So that's pretty cool. The whale does seem to be in good health, so that's good news. And they haven't seen any weird behavior from it. So it just seems like found a spot. Maybe there's food there. Who knows? Whatever's going on, he seems to be happy. So he's happy. I'm happy. This is a surprise, surprise. There's a fisherman in Tennessee who caught this alligator. Alligators, which are not supposed to be in the waterway in which this person was fishing. This happened at a lake in Northeast Tennessee. This man pulls up this 4-foot-long alligator. Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency saying they got a call from the fisherman, this angler, at Norris Lake. The fisherman or angler had the alligator pinned to the ground behind its head, and he told the wildlife officers that he caught it on a swim bait. I guess that's some type of bait they use. But these alligators are not native to that part of Tennessee. They're considered a wildlife species. They're inherently dangerous to humans, and they may only be possessed by permitted exhibitors and commercial propagators. So this alligator was taken to the Little Ponderosa Zoo and Rescue, which is an exotic animal rescue facility in Tennessee. They don't know what the origin of this alligator is, if it was being held illegally in captivity, maybe someone had it as a pet and thought, oh, I can't have this animal in my house, and they released it into the lake. No one really knows. This zoo doesn't normally have alligators on hand, so right now they're looking for a permanent home for this gator, but that was quite a surprise. Imagine fishing in a lake that doesn't usually have alligators, and here you have this guy. Man. In other animal news, there is a parrot who went missing, and this parrot kind of got lost for a couple of days and ends up trying to fend off attacks from, I don't know, other predators types of things. So kind of a scary situation, but looks like at this point, the parrot may be okay, but I wanted to show you video of this. This is from, I think, some type of Fox affiliate. Oh, no, a CBS affiliate where this happened. Check it out.
Tree 40 feet high. Firefighters couldn't get him down. They brought their equipment, their ladders. Everything just seemed to spook him to another tree, which actually helped because by the time I arrived, he went into this tree, which was a little bit lower, has a horizontal branch. So his owner was trying to coax him to walk down the branch. His owner told me he was hungry, but he had been trying to give him all this food. He didn't have anything left to try. Well, you know, I'm a mom of three little kids. I got snacks in my purse. I got snacks in my car. I got snacks everywhere, basically. So I went to my car, grabbed a little bag of Doritos, and we used that to lure the bird down slowly. The owner was shaking the bag, offering little chips to this bird, and that's when he was able to get close enough where he just finally snatched him and grabbed him. And oh my gosh, you can only imagine the relief. I mean, this bird was stuck up there. He was being attacked by hawks. He was getting tired, hungry, all of those things. So to have him finally safe back in his owner's arms just, you know, meant a lot to this guy.
Oh, I am thankful. I'm relieved. You know, I haven't slept in 3 days well because it's like your child. You know, your child is up stuck in a tree, can't get down, and nobody can get him down.
I keep water in the car too, of course. So we got Samba some water and he was feeling a lot better. He's a 15-year-old Catalina macaw. His owner took him straight to the vet after this to get him checked out, make sure he was okay. You know, he kind of perked up a little bit with the snacks, with the water. I will say it did make me laugh because his owner said, you know, I don't normally give him junk food like this. So he has, you know, a more discerning palate than my little kids. But, you know, all's well that ends well. We got the bird down and I know they are happy to have him back home.
I love the mom move. It's just so classic.
Dude, what mom doesn't have snacks in the purse in the car?
Yeah, purse snacks for the win. That reporter and Doritos for the win as well. So glad they got that animal back safely. That's so funny with the Doritos. There's another video I wanted to show you guys. This one is of a little creature called a Phanaloca. Have you ever heard of such a thing? A Phanaloca was born at the Nashville Zoo, and everybody's welcoming this little creature. It's a rare spotted Phanaloca, which is a Madagascar native species, also known as a Malagasy civet. This zoo, the only facility in the United States to keep Phanalocas, said the male pup was born March 10th. It doesn't yet have a name. They previously welcomed another one a couple of years ago. That was Pepite is what she was named. And she was the first of her species to be born at the zoo and among the first to be born in the country. The new arrival being hand-reared, and zookeepers can be seen by the public in the facility's veterinary center with this little creature. Oh my goodness, is this one cute. I am telling you, I have to share the screen so you guys can see this Fanaluca. This is what it looks like. It's another one of these big-eyed, super sweet-looking creatures. Look at this. Yeah, you can see this little Fanaluca. How cute. You see? Oh, adorable. It looks so shaky and so little. Yeah. So this little guy just born March 10th. I don't think they've named him yet. But he's the latest. Yeah, very cute. So just wanted to share that with you guys. All right, that is animals for today. And let us move on now to, you never know what's at the bottom of your purse. As we just heard from that reporter, you know, moms have all kinds of stuff in their purse. I'm sure if I pulled my purse up here, I would be able to find the craziest stuff in the bottom of it. People stick toys in there, all kinds of stuff. Well, in this case, a woman found something pretty valuable at the bottom of her purse. Yes, my friends, another lottery story. That's what we have here today. And this happened in Maryland, where this woman won a $50,000 lottery prize. She said she never checks her lottery tickets until her purse pocket is full. And that is when she checked, and she realized that she had purchased a ticket for the March 4th Powerball drawing. She got it at the Giant store in Annapolis, Maryland, stuck it in a dedicated pocket in her purse. She said, "I don't check the tickets until they no longer fit in the lottery pocket in my purse." Finally, she runs out of space last week. She takes her tickets to the store to scan, and she asked a clerk for help when scanning the March 4th ticket because there was some type of unclear message on there. And she said the clerk's eyes got really big when she checked the ticket on the lottery terminal. And she said, "We can't cash that one here." This is when this woman discovers, her name is Cher, that she won the $50,000 on one line of her ticket, and another line got her $7. So it's $50,007. Hey, take every dollar you can get. She said, "Between the clerk's reaction and what she told me, I figured I'd won a pretty big. My knees were weak. I was trying not to cry, but I held it together until I got into my car." Her plans for this prize money include paying off medical debt and making some household repairs. So I'm telling you, never know what you find in the bottom of the purse. Let's talk about the Rivian. The Rivian had a new display, kind of an announcement for their cars. They have an updated vehicle now called the R2 electric SUV, and they've given it this retro-inspired crossover kind of look. It was a surprise move when they unveiled the smaller R3 compact hatchback SUV, performance-oriented RX3 is what it's called. It's got a sloped backside. And they said it was inspired by Group B rally cars. Even the shape is different from the very chopped off kind of straight rear of the other vehicles. And so, yeah, the new R2 and now the new R3 from Rivian as well. This is the R2 is the new one that they've just unveiled. And then this is the R3. Interesting looking cars. I still haven't quite gotten used to seeing them on the roadways yet, but so the R2 is a fresh midsize EV platform. The R3, both the R2 and R3, available with three motor configuration options: a single motor, a rear wheel drive, a dual motor, all-wheel drive, and a three motor setup with two motors in the rear and one in the front. So they announced the vehicle, and less than 24 hours after they launched it, more than 68,000 reservations came in for the R2 already. Hopefully that will do Rivian some good, because I think they had some layoffs there recently. So hopefully the company manages to thrive and do well with this. But yeah. It's an exciting day for them to have all this business. So that's good. So, speaking of cars, how about this? There are these people that are trying to, We'll see if they're successful. Do this cross-country trip. 500-mile journey. In the little tiny toy cars. That's what they're doing. Check it out. It doesn't seem very comfortable to me, but all right.
We're going to take these toy cars over 500 miles.
It's our setup, baby!
And they're off. To a very slow start. A New Jersey woman, alongside her best friend and boyfriend, are attempting to travel the longest distance by toy cars to receive a Guinness World Record. How far, you ask? Oh, just 500 miles.
An actual journey.
Now, nobody has attempted this record, which may be why the idea has struck the interest of millions online.
We had these cars as kids.
Cassie Aron and Lauren have been best friends since kindergarten, and they say the toy cars evoke a sense of nostalgia for them.
We used to ride around with toy cars as kids, and we've always wanted a Guinness World Record attempt, so we're like, this would be a fun way to like kind of honor our childhood. Originally it came as kind of a laughable idea, and then it kind of turned into this like actual thing that we decided to do.
And they have already overcome trials and tribulations. The two were mere miles into their first attempt before everything went wrong.
We had tried this once before and we got a total of 6 miles with the other cars. Pedals stopped working, batteries not going as far as we planned.
It's really hard to find a toy car that even goes faster than 2 or 3 miles an hour. So our options were very limited because we didn't want to be going 2 miles an hour down the entire coast of Florida.
So after buying a new toy car for this record attempt, they hit the road again. And it's going to be a wild ride. A 2-month wild ride.
We're starting at the top of Florida.
Cassie and Lauren are driving from Jacksonville to Key West, 500 miles down the entire coast of Florida on 2 battery-powered vehicles.
From Jacksonville to Key West, it's about 2 months. That being said, that is with no hiccups. These are toys, so it's very likely we will have hiccups. Then it will.
Did you see the skateboard going even faster than the toy cars? I mean, it's an interesting road trip, something fun to do with a friend when you're young, and they're trying to set this Guinness World Record, so that's pretty cool. Another story that I wanted to show you, vehicle-related, is this electric snowmobile. This is a new thing. They're trying to design this kind of cool looking snowmobile, all electric. It's a Swedish mobility company called Vidde, V-I-D-D-E. And they have developed this electric snowmobile working with an Italian design studio. The whole point, minimize carbon emissions while being fun to drive, right? The snowmobile, it's called the Alpha Snowmobile, cuts emissions from both operation and production by about 85% because of its 130 kilowatt electric motor and its use of recycled and recyclable materials. The whole point of this is to create an alternative to the existing gas and diesel snowmobiles, which apparently produce more than twice as much CO2 per journey as a car. I did not know that. Their Vidde, the company, V-I-D-D-E, Vidde, is that how you say Vidde? They're aiming for the world's first electric snowmobile with circular ambition to generate less than 100 grams of CO2 per kilometer. In 2 years, a LearnCore team working with absolute top partners has taken the terrain mobility category from super dirty to the start of a circular electric future, is what the Vidde Snow Mobility CEO says. They are proud to present the world's cleanest snowmobile on the market, and they say they look forward to validating that in actual use with their partners. So other benefits of this electric motor, apparently significant reduction in noise, so this vehicle can be used to explore nature without disrupting wildlife and the peace and calm, serene nature of the area. In winter temperatures, it can be used as low as minus 35 degrees Celsius. The design of it, they call it a clean sheet approach. They removed any unnecessary details, and that resulted in this low slung kind of angular looking snowmobile. The research they did, they took it on test runs. They called their prototype the Frankenstein. And they took it out to the Ice Hotel in northern Sweden. and they've tested it there. They had the opportunity to take it on safari tours to witness the Northern Lights. And so far, they say it's doing really well. I would be a little nervous if I'm out in the wilderness and I run out of electricity, like I run out of juice. I mean, I guess it's the same thing as you run out of gas and you've got a gauge and whatever else. I don't know. But I didn't know that snowmobiles were that polluting. So I guess it's good that we're doing it this way, going a little different with that. Do you see the stories about the, and they do this every year, it's the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. And it's the foods that are the cleanest to eat and the ones that aren't so clean at all. 95% of non-organic strawberries, leafy greens like spinach and kale, collard and mustard greens, grapes, peaches, and pears tested by the U.S. government contain detectable levels of pesticides. This is according to this year's 2024 Shopper's Guide to Pesticides in Produce. Nectars, apples, bell, and hot peppers, cherries, blueberries, and green beans rounded out the list of the 12 most contaminated samples of produce. They call it the Dirty Dozen. The Environmental Working Group, a health health advocacy organization, has produced this annual report since 2004. So they've been doing this a while. Farm workers, they say, who are exposed to all these pesticides are at the highest risk for all the things that can happen when you're ingesting these things or around these things. And that includes preterm births, birth defects, neural tube defects, miscarriages, genetic damage, also lower sperm counts, heart disease, some type of cancers, this type of thing. A study done last month found children exposed at an early age showed poorer neurodevelopment from infancy through adolescence. But there's also, even though we have our Dirty Dozen, a Clean 15. And these are the list of foods that were best when they were tested, right? Avocados, sweet corn, pineapples, onions, papayas leading the list with the least amount of trace pesticides. Nearly 65% of the fruits and veggies in that grouping had no detectable pesticide residues, that according to this report. Also on the Clean 15, frozen sweet peas, asparagus, honeydew melons, kiwis, cabbage, watermelons, mushrooms, mangoes, sweet potatoes, and carrots. We eat a lot of carrots and sweet potatoes at my house. So this is good that the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. FDA really say people need to wash, peel, and scrub fruits and vegetables. That it's sometimes workers only brush off the dirt of the produce, and then the fruits and vegetables, if they just brush it off, are tested for more than 250 different pesticides. They post all of these results online. Non-organic fruits and vegetables, the majority of testing from the USDA, and analysis of that data, non-organic, all right, found traces of 254 pesticides in all fruits and vegetables analyzed. 209 of those chemicals on the produce in the Dirty Dozen list. So 70% of non-organic produce tested by the USDA and the FDA had pesticide levels within the legal limits allowed by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. I don't care. I still don't want them, right? This is a wording from the UC Davis, which is they wrote a report on this whole thing. The dose makes the poison, not its presence or absence, and that dose determines the potential for harm. So in many cases, they say you'd have to be exposed to a million times more than what we are exposed to before you'd see any effect at all. But they also say legal levels don't mean safe levels, right? That's what we think, but sometimes they don't know. Sometimes there's more of a significant risk to human health. So, and they do bring in a couple of different examples. One of them, there was an herbicide linked to thyroid cancers for years before the EPA told the public that there was a risk to human health. In another example, chlorpyrifos, a pesticide linked to brain damage in children and fetuses, that was around, and it took a while for them to ban it as well. So green beans, they say, continue to show traits of acephate, which is a toxic pesticide that the EPA banned for use on green beans more than 10 years ago. So for some reason, it's still around. Anyway, that's the list of the clean 15 and the dirty dozen. It's a list I look at every year and kind of think, what are we eating and what are we eating on the list and what can we eat more of? Check out this energy plant. This thing is huge. It is located in India. This coal billionaire is building the world's biggest clean energy plant. It is 5 times the size of the city of Paris. This thing is visible from space. It's the world's biggest energy plant. Makes enough electricity to power the whole country of Switzerland. They've put it on the barren salt desert on the edge of Western India, where they have all this space. And they say it's one of the most important sources of clean energy anywhere on the planet. And apparently it's so overwhelming that the man in charge of it has a hard time keeping up with it. He is the nephew of one of the wealthiest men in Asia, Gautam Adani, has a $100 billion fortune from the Adani Group, India's biggest coal importer and a leading miner of dirty fuel, right? But they now have this clean energy unit, AGEL, Eagle, building this huge solar and wind power plant in the western Indian state of Gujarat. It costs $20 billion to build it. When it's finished, it will be the world's biggest renewable park. That should be in about 5 years, then it's done. And it should generate enough clean electricity to power 16 million Indian homes. They say the success of this is critical to India's efforts to reduce population and hit their climate goals while meeting their energy needs as well. Still in India, coal accounts for 70% of electricity that India generates. So this is just 12 miles from one of the most dangerous borders separating India and Pakistan. It's 200 square miles. It is the planet's largest power plant, regardless of energy source. So that it's a clean energy plant is great with renewable sources, but it's the biggest power plant in the world. Very interesting. Like to see that they're using solar and wind there, right? This is something we talked earlier. I don't know if you were with me for the Nicki Maduro show this morning. We had talked about not being able to insure your home in some states, in Florida, California, here because of wildfires, right? This company, or I should say these designers, have come out now with what they say is a house that's able to stand up to wildfires. It is in Sonoma County, as a matter of fact. It is, they call it the Fire Country Lookout, and it is in Healdsburg on the top of this hill, surrounded by all of those trees. Now, if I looked at that house, I would think, that is a spot I don't want to build. That is beautiful, but also super dangerous. But that's why they built this house here. This is, you've got to take a long, winding gravel road to get to it. It was designed for a couple with 3 young children who wanted a remote retreat. That it is. And it was designed by the husband's upbringing in Johannesburg, South Africa. His father ran a construction company and gave his son a love of being out in the bush. And so they wanted to be out in nature, what have you. So they visit Healdsburg. They love the picturesque rolling hills and the trees and everything else, and decide to build this home. So they go to Studio Vara, which is an architectural-based firm located in San Francisco. Pardon me. Sorry, I had to cough. And they decide they're going to build this sensitive house to the environment. So it's a 3,000 896 square foot home that stretches east to west along a ridge, and it has two volumes separated by a breezeway in between. It's a prismatic form, kinked at the center so that you maximize the views in this area. It's got a concrete base and a structural frame made of glue laminated timber. Standing seam zinc panels wrap around the walls of the roof, forming a tough shell that helps protect this home from not only the bright sun, but also wildfires that erupt in this area. So it's the standing seam zinc panels that make this home kind of, I want to say fireproof. They don't ever say fireproof in this article. They say it's able to stand up to wildfires. Okay, well, if it's, that's kind of means fireproof to me, right? They're taking a chance putting this, building this amazing home up here. It has angled high ceilings, exposed wooden beams, makes it feel spacious and grand. Four bedrooms and a primary suite, all of which are on this single corridor. It is designed to operate off the grid as well. So they've got a photovoltaic array generating energy. They've got solar panels that heat the water for daily use and also the beautiful swimming pool. They've got their own septic system and water well up there, propane gas up there as well. Maybe this is the way we're going to have to do it, you guys. If we can't insure our homes, we're going to all have to wrap our houses in the zinc wrap to make sure that if the fire comes, it's not going to, you know, crispify our homes. Maybe then they'll insure us if this is what we do. I don't know. Even then, I would be worried about what was going on around me. But hey, I mean, at least somebody's, before building there, had some thought about how to do it, right? Yeah. Let's see what you guys have to say in the chat about this. I'm interested. Yeah, and the Titanic was unsinkable, says Walter. You'd at least have the shell survive and you could rebuild, possibly, says 63MG. Sounds like you just built an oven, says Harry. Yeah, could you survive inside? Well, there is a swimming pool. So I guess, you know, you could always keep diving down until the flames had passed. I don't know. Wes says Florida's tornadoes and hurricanes, not that worried about wildfires. Yeah, I had we had someone in the chat earlier from Florida to Wes in the morning show who said they couldn't get insurance. They live right on the coast in Florida because of flooding and storm damage there. So, yeah. Also from 63MG, exactly what I would build, but maybe with more clearance from those trees. I thought the same thing. They're a little too close, right? 63 wants to build something like this in Hawaii, tsunami and hurricane resistant. I guess you need fire resistant in Hawaii as well. Walter says, I forgot I don't live in Sonoma County anymore. Healdsburg is a nice city. Yeah. Right, Gordon. We were talking about that earlier. But maybe if they were fireproof like this, they would. William says, I hate to be that guy, but a wildfire gives no S's about how well you fireproof your home. Unless it's this fireproof material. I guess they'll find out sooner or later, right? Doug says, all architects know you can design, have it built, but sooner or later, structures fail. I don't know. I mean, it's a nice idea, and I hope it works for them. You know? Looks like a beautiful, picturesque spot. Fingers crossed the fire doesn't come. But in California, all bets are off. How about the best public markets? Because two of them are right here in California. And they include, yeah, you guessed it, the Ferry Building in San Francisco. And also Oxbow Market in Napa. But the USA Today has nominated the best public markets around the country. And San Francisco's historic Ferry Building and Napa's Oxbow Public Market are both nominated for spots on this year's USA Today Reader's Choice list of the 10 best markets in the country. Two Los Angeles area markets, the original Farmers Market and the Grand Central Market, also make the cuts. So hopefully they win. I don't know. I love the Farmers Market in San Francisco. I think it's really cool the way they turned that historic building into such a wonderful place to shop and buy organic food and all the interesting things they have in there. I've been to the Oxbow Public Market in Napa as well. That's also pretty cool. I'll show you a picture of it. Here it is. Yeah. Kind of cool. There's some moms that are doing this. It's called Cali Water. These moms are launching this new pouch water for kids. Actress Nikki Reed, TV personality and fitness expert Brooke Burke, and actress and singer-songwriter Rosalind Sanchez are all the ambassadors for this drink company's new kids line. The pouches, they say, are eco-friendly. Is that plastic on the top? I don't know. They're designed to be delicious, hydrating drink and give new options for parents to help cut out the sugar and keep their little ones hydrated throughout the day. Cali Water, they say, offers clean, kid-friendly, doctor-approved drinks. The company, founded by Vanessa Hudgens, they say, loved by moms and healthcare providers. So it's a prickly pear cactus fruit. It's the base for all Cali Water beverages sourced directly from the Sonoran Desert with five naturally occurring electrolytes, plus rare antioxidants known to support skin and digestive health for people of all ages. It's got 10 calories, 3 grams of sugar, and 8 to 9 milligrams of potassium in this Cali Water. Cali Water. I don't know. Maybe it's good. I'm not sure about it. I thought it was interesting that these celebrities are all gathering together to make this thing happen. People tip more if this is on the bill. What is it, you might ask? Well, it is a happy face. I guess that makes us feel more generous, right? A smile goes a long way, especially if it's printed right on the restaurant check. This comes from the results of a recent study published in the International Journal of Hospitality Management. It suggests that restaurant patrons can be encouraged to tip a little bit extra if there's a smiley face emoji printed alongside the suggested gratuity on their check. The thought was, if we gave them a smiley face or if it was kind of cute, that it would elicit more of a positive reaction, right? And it seems to have worked. So, and they say the prompts aren't entirely unlike existing practices where a restaurant operator might print the suggested monetary tip amount, like 18%, $9, they tell you what it is, try to make it easy for you. And then some servers actually draw a little smiley face and pen right on the check. They say those methods work to a degree. Some have the unintended effect of irritating people, but the smiley face may be similarly processed by the human brain as an actual smiling face, provoking a more positive response. And so, the people they studied giving the tips out tipped an average of 11% more if there was a smiley face. Look how susceptible we are to these things. A little smiley face and all of a sudden you're all generous. That's how it works out. Okay, I promised that we would get to trivia and now I only have a few minutes left. So, thanks to Mama Day 3 Boys, we are going to take the citizenship test today, all right? Oh, regarding the Cali Water, Mama says too many tunas, prickly pears, will make you constipated. Oh, yeah, don't want to do that. You think I should take a break? Oh, I don't have the break anymore. I don't have the break thing, sorry. Thank you for that, though. We're not doing the break. So, also, I don't know if you guys noticed this about me. I have a hard time asking for contributions and donations. So I just figure by now, you know, right? And so if you want to, you know where it is. And if you don't, then you don't. All right. So that's what has become of the break. All right. Can you pass this citizenship test? Here it is. What is the most important right granted to United States citizens? That's the first question. The most important right granted to United States citizens. You wouldn't know it by the way we treat this right. I'll tell you what. It's a right that's important to me. I don't take it for granted. Life, liberty, and happiness seems pretty important to me, but that is not the right answer. Yeah, you guys got it. William gets it first with, I think William gets it first, freedom, I see speech. The right to vote would be the most important right granted to U.S. citizens. All other rights depend on it. Who was the principal author of the Declaration of Independence? I would have gotten this one right. Who was the principal author of the Declaration of Independence? See if anybody gets it. That's right. It indeed is Thomas Jefferson. He wanted his friend John Adams to write it, but Adams believed Jefferson was the better man for the task and gave three reasons. Reason first, he said, you are a Virginian, and a Virginian ought to appear at the head of the business. Reason two, I am obnoxious, suspected, and unpopular. Reason three, you can write 10 times better than I can. So Adam says, no, you do it, Thomas Jefferson. Number three, how many amendments are there to the U.S. Constitution? How many amendments are there to the U.S. Constitution so far? Oh, and thank you, Doug. Thank you so much for the $5 super sticker. So appreciated. Harry jumping in with $5 as well. And Wes, I'm late today. Sorry, but I have a note from my mother. Thanks. You know what? Thank your mother for giving us you, because you're awesome. So Wes, Doug, and Harry, thank you for that. All right, let's jump back into it. How many amendments are there to the United States Constitution as of now? And the first person to get it right is William Martinez. Rock on. Well done. Jim's like 37? I don't know. 27, says Walter. Yes, you would be right. 27. A lot of people getting it right. Yeah. Okay. Question four. This is what happens when I'm doing a book. I let my page go. Hold on. Page 473. All right. Question four. If both the president and the vice president die, who then becomes the president of the United States? Yeah, I knew this one too. You guys are probably going to get this one easily. Yeah, Deidre got it. It's the Speaker of the House. Absolutely. Number five. Name the original 13 colonies. I always get like 7 or 8 and then I kind of peter out. Name the original 13 colonies. See if you guys can get them right. Sometimes you type in maybe half of them and you're like, oh God. Go way back to elementary school history. Hopefully I'll be able to get it right. You guys doing it? Okay, I have the answer. See what you guys have to say. No? Nobody's typing it in. Okay, I'll give them to you. Virginia, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, North Carolina, South Carolina, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Maryland, Delaware, and Georgia. Did you guys have it right? Not enough space. I don't know who got it right. Yeah. Everything on the eastern seaboard from Virginia north. All right. I won't go through it all, but I'm sure you guys got it right. Well done. If you got it right, good for you. Kudos to you. What three qualifications does the U.S. Constitution require candidates for president? I think we know this one. Apparently you can be an insurrectionist and qualify. I guess that's okay. Yeah. Chris from Menlo Park with a $20 super sticker. You work hard to entertain us. Thanks, and bring back the break. Okay, I'll have to record something because I don't have the breaks anymore, but I will. I'll do it. I like that little 28-second thing just to get in and get out. But Chris from Menlo Park, I love your hat, and thank you so much for the contribution. It really means a lot. All right, let's see who gets it right. Age and born here. Birth 35. Remember, there's three of them, right? It is 1, must be a native born citizen. 2, must be at least 35 years old. And 3, have to have lived in the United States for at least 14 years. So you can be born here, your parents whisk you away, but you've never lived here. That's not going to cut it. So yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Good job, everybody. All right, next question. Are we all citizens yet? Do we deserve our citizenship? I don't know. In what year was the U.S. Constitution written? In what year was the U.S. Constitution written? I don't know if I would have gotten this one. I don't think so. Deidre, you're killing it. Yes, 1787. Yes, Walter. 1787 is when our Constitution was written. Well done, you guys. All right. The next one is name. And this one, I'm not going to be able to help you with. So see if you can get it right. You're going to have to look this one up yourself, depending on where you are. Name your U.S. representative and your two senators. Can you do it? Part of the test. Mama says my dad passed this test 4 years ago. Right on. This is the harder version, too. There's an easier version of it in this book. Senators Alex Padilla and I forget her first name, starts with an L, Butler, currently, right? But probably will be replaced by Adam Schiff. Those are my senators. My representative is Congressman Jared Huffman, representing Marin and Sonoma County. Padilla, Butler, Huffman. Me too, Ren. Well done. Yep, was Feinstein and Kamala. Not anymore. Garamendi. Mm-hmm. Congressman Swalwell. You got SU. All right. Okay, well done, you guys. Let's move on. Carry on. Name the four amendments that guarantee or address voting rights. The four amendments that guarantee and address voting rights. I'll give you the first one. It's the 15th. Now you have three, because that's kind of hard. You believe you have to answer these questions to become a citizen? Most citizens don't even know this stuff. I mean, I can't memorize it, but I have my little U.S. pocket constitution that I got in Gettysburg. I always keep it near me. I don't know why. But yeah, 15, 17, 19, and 20. 15, 19, 24, and 26, my friend. Yeah. Mm-hmm. People actually know this stuff? I guess they do. I guess they do, Sandy. Absolutely. Next one. What officials and departments make up the executive branch of the federal government? What officials and departments make up the executive branch of the federal government? That is question, I think we're on 10. Yeah. So we know the president, right? Who else? That's why you study it, says Lori. Yeah, you'd have to. Yeah. Murphy says, I can sing the 19th Amendment song from the Schoolhouse Rock. You know what? I wish that you would come on and do that. President, Vice President, Senate, House, says Sandy. President, VP, and Treasury. Head of State, Head of Military, President. All right, here's the answer. The answer is the President, the Cabinet, and the departments under the Cabinet members. It's an easy rule of thumb, they say. If it's part of the federal government, but it isn't part of the federal courts or the Congress, it's part of the executive branch. Kind of a chintzy answer, but okay. What is the introduction to the U.S. Constitution called? I knew this one. What is the introduction to the U.S. Constitution called? before they really dig into it. It's called the fill in the blank. Yes. Preamble, Sandy. I think Mars was the first one to jump in with that. It is indeed the preamble. Look at you guys. I'm so proud. We're such good citizens together. That's awesome. Whose rights are guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights? Whose rights are guaranteed by the Bill of Rights and the U.S. Constitution? Who specifically? Anybody? Bueller? And this one, I think people need to take a look at, especially today, because I don't know if you saw the video of the immigrants that there was a break in the fence at the border in El Paso and people stormed through and there were fights with Border Patrol officers. It's just a horrible scene. All men, not women, that's for sure. We the people, as citizens, we the people, all citizens. Okay, I'm going to give you guys the answer. Here's the answer. Everyone who lives in the United States, whether they are citizens or not, covered by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Everyone who lives here, doesn't matter if you're a citizen, you're here, you're on U.S. soil, you're covered by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. That's America, my friends. Gets me emotional. All right. Number 13. Who was president during the Civil War? Okay, if you don't get this one, I don't have hope for you. I said that last night during a PTA meeting. I was so mean. Oh, it wasn't a good night for me. Let me just say that. It was 45 minutes of talking about a really stupid topic. So, yes, indeed. Lincoln. Everybody's correct. Abe Lincoln, indeed. Yes. I would have been disappointed in you guys if you hadn't got that one. Like, there's a bare minimum, right? Okay. If you didn't get that, I'm sorry. Name the major river running north to south that divides the United States. The major river north to south that divides the United States. Yeah. Oh, you got it first? Yeah. All right. Yes, I think William got it first. Mississippi River. That is indeed the answer. What type of democratic government does the United States actually have? What type of democratic government does the United States actually have? Yep, Ren gets it. It's a republic. Republican form of government that means the citizens elect representatives who form the government. This is also known as a representative democracy. In a direct or pure democracy, voters would make the laws themselves instead of electing representatives to do it for them. The ancient Greek city-state of Athens was governed by a direct democracy. So we're almost done. 16. What is the basic belief of the Declaration of Independence? You know this one. You guys all got that. That's so good. Republic. Everybody throws down with the Republic. Nicely done. What was the question? What is the basic belief of the Declaration of Independence? Good answer. I don't think it's the right one, though. Yes, this is the right one. That all men are created equal. Men apparently being men and women, but I really think they meant men. 17, and this is the last one. What's the address of the White House? Where is the White House located? Include the street address. You know the address of the White House? See if you get it. Yeah, you got it. 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Jim says 1600 Penny. Yep. I'll accept it. Yep. You guys got it. Well done. Good job. I now pronounce you citizens of the United States with absolutely nothing to back that up. But hey, that's all right. There's an easier test in this Uncle John's bathroom reader, but this is what I keep in the bathroom. Hopefully my kids are reading it when they're in there and they're knowing all these things too. So that is, should we do that? I don't know. You guys want to keep going? You want to do the other test? It's a little early to end up. Maybe you have to go. I'm not sure. What do you think in the chat? Can I get a Canadian passport? I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah, you're welcome. We'll do it again. If you have any suggestions for trivia categories or what you'd like to see, Deidre wants me to keep going. No, it isn't an easy test at all. All right. You guys want more? I'll give you more. If you can't stay for it, I understand. No problem. But if you want to stick around, we'll do a little bit more. Deidre, thank you for the $5. Aloha to you. Have a great time on the beaches of Maui. Enjoy. Make sure you get an Ululani's for me. Shave ice. I had one in Livermore when I drove to the band competition. And I have to say that it wasn't quite the same. There's something, I think, about the fresh fruit in Hawaii that, I don't know, it seems to be a little brighter, right? And a little better. So Ululani's in Livermore, it's good. It's just not the same. It's not the same. Okay. I'm going to page 334 this is supposed to be the easy test. Let's see how easy it really is. See if you can get the answers right for this one. Here it is. I'm going to get it. Okay. Can you pass the U.S. citizenship test? Here we go. What is it called when the president refuses to sign a bill into law and returns it to the Congress with his objections? It is the easy test. Full-on easy test. Come on now. Yeah. If you guessed veto, you would be correct. I better keep my answers page just in case I don't know the answer. If I don't know the answers to the easiest test, though, then maybe I need a refresh class. I don't know. Maybe they'll get a little harder. Yeah, that would be a veto. we knew that one, right? Okay, number two. What do we celebrate on the 4th of July? Let's see if you guys get this one. What do we celebrate on the 4th of July? You would think it's independence, right? That's what I think, our independence from Britain. We celebrate rockets. Yes, it's rockets, LJ, totally rockets. Freedom with fireworks from China. We celebrate Will Smith. Yes, we do. Here's what we celebrate. The adoption of the Declaration of Independence. I would have said freedom too, for what it's worth. Number three, name one of the five freedoms outlined in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. I thought this was supposed to be the easy test. It's taken a turn. Name one of the five freedoms outlined in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Yes. How many are you supposed to name? I just read the question. Name one. Okay, yeah, this is right. Religion, yes. Speech, yes. Speech, yes. Barbecue, no. I know that was 4th of July. Deidre, right on. You got it. Ren, yes. Deidre, yes. Here it is. Freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, and freedom to petition the government. Those are the ones. How many justices are there on the Supreme Court? You guys have to know this one. Someone, you better get it fast. How many justices are on the United States Supreme Court? You guys are still trying to figure out your freedoms? Yes, nine. Nine, nine. You guys are fast typers. Look at you go. Deidre jumping in with it first, followed by William, Ren, Colleen. Well done, you guys. All right, here we are. You want to keep going? We'll keep going. Okay. Who is the commander in chief of the U.S. military? Do we even have to ask this one? This is where they give you a break and then they throw another hard one at you. Who is the commander in chief of the United States military? Yeah, Ren, it's the president. You got it. Who alone has the power to declare war in the United States? Mm-hmm. Who alone has the power to declare war on the on behalf of the United States? That's not how they worded it. It was, who alone has the power to declare war in the United States? Yeah. Whoever said Congress gets it right, right? Yeah, who said it first? Deidre and Sandy and Ren and Jim. Right on, you guys. Yes, Congress. Who elects the Congress? Who elects the Congress? We know who elects Congress? Whoever has the most money. Thank you for it. That was beautiful. That was worth the price of admission for this. Yes, the people, the public, the voters, they phrase it as the citizens of the United States. But yes, it's the party people who elect the Congress. Name, oh, come on. Who elects the president of the United States? Unless that's a trick question. Who elects the president of the United States? Yeah. Who elects the president of the United States? Kind of a trick question, in a way. Yeah, it is. It's the Electoral College that elects the president of the United States. Deidre slapping it down first again. Girl, you're a fast typist. Mama, yep. John, yeah. Okay. Name the three branches of the federal government. These are easy. This is like, right? I mean, some of them may be a little challenging. Some of them we know. Deidre's like, 35 words per minute? Thank you very much. Who gets it first? My friend Jim, legislative, executive, judicial. Well done. Let's see what we got here. Who is the head of the executive branch? I'm skipping that one. The Civil War was fought over what important issues? This answer will appease all people. The Civil War was fought over which issues? That would have been my answer. But it's slavery and states' rights. Thank you. That's fine. Good job, Deidre. Well done. What are the duties of the Supreme Court? What are the duties of the U.S. Supreme Court? It's a simple one. What are the duties of the Supreme Court? Uphold the Constitution? Not exactly what they have in mind, but kind of. I think that's part of the oath they take, right? To mess with people, right? To do what Trump says. You guys have the best answers. Yeah, absolutely, Lori. Take money from donors. Oh, you guys are killing me. Janet, for the win. To interpret laws. That is correct. Although I like the other answer so much better, honestly. Oh, God, that was good. How many voting members are there in the House of Representatives? How many voting members are there in the House of Representatives? You guys are awesome. This is why I love y'all. Yeah, 435. That's correct. How many senators are there in the U.S. Senate? Yeah. How many senators are there in the U.S. Senate? Oh, got the answers for that one question. That'll keep me laughing all day. 100 is the correct answer, and Janet gets it. Deidre, were you just trying to get it wrong? You're that girl. We don't want you to think you don't want us to think you're too smart. It's 100. Well done. Okay. Why are there that many senators in the U.S. Senate? Why indeed? Because each of the 50 states has two. Brain fart. I gave you the answer. Each of the 50 states has two. That was a dumb question. How long is, let's see. Oh, what are the first 10 amendments to the United States Constitution called? What are the first 10 amendments to the United States Constitution called? What's the official name for them? Yeah, that was two per state. That was right. Yes, you are correct. It is the Bill of Rights, and that would be, Deidre, Jim, Janet, Mars. Well done, you guys. All right. This doesn't go on for too much longer. How long is the term of each U.S. senator? How long is the term of each U.S. senator? There must be some time between when you type it and it shows up to me. Deidre, yes, 6 years. 6 years for a U.S. senator. Mm-hmm, that's correct. Was it Deidre? It was Deidre. Yeah. Right on, guys. How long is the term of each U.S. representative? This alone is the reason to run for Senate. Can you imagine having to go through this every, how many years? Every 2 years. Yeah. Two is correct. I don't know if you were trying to answer the last one or this one, but I'm going to say that you were trying to answer this one. Well done. How many full terms can a U.S. president serve? How many full terms can a U.S. president serve? Yeah, it's, I don't know if this is in reference to this, but it is two. And I'm not sure, the answers are bleeding together, so I don't know which one is which. But yes, it is 2 years. Good job, everybody. Mm-hmm. And the next question is, how many full terms can a U.S. senator or representative serve? How many full terms can a U.S. senator or representative? That's correct. Too many is the right answer, Heather. But the answer in the book is unlimited. There is no limit. Mm-hmm, that's correct. Who said, give me liberty or give me death? Who said, give me liberty or give me death? And this is the last question we'll ask. As many as they can stand. That's right. As many as we can stand, right? Give me liberty or give me death. Who said it? No. Not Nathan Hale. I'm going to give it to Jim. It is indeed Patrick Henry. According to tradition, Henry said it in 1775 during the Virginia Provincial Convention. The following year, he became the independent Virginia's first governor, and he was largely responsible for the passage of the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution. So, if you did well on today's test, congratulations. You're a fine American. I commend you. Well done. So stupid that they don't have limits. It's true. It's true. Walt Disney. Seems like it. We're living in Walt Disney's world. Thank you guys for playing along with me. Thank you for being here on the After Party Live. We'll be back. I'll be back tomorrow. I keep saying we. Well, we collectively will be back. Thank you to Wes for the $5 super sticker. Thank you to Doug as well for the $5, Harry for the $5, Chris from Menlo Park for the $20, Deidre for the $5. Aloha to you too. And thank you guys for playing along and for hanging out. I'll see you tomorrow. Nikki will be back on the Nikki Maduro Show, on the Mark Thompson Show. We get to visit with Michael Schur. We get to visit with Michael Snyder. And then we talk about Friday Fabulous Florida, which is always a highlight of my Friday. And then we'll be right back here to wrap it up and lighten things up. So thank you again. Hope you have a great rest of your day. And I will see you back here tomorrow. But for now, we'll play all your goodbyes. Have a great day, everyone.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.